Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. I want you to picture a city, a really dense, bustling metropolis.
Okay, I am picturing it.
But there is a catch. This city is split right down the middle by a massive, raging river. So you have an east side and a west side.
Two separate entities.
Right. They function independently, the lights go on, the trash gets picked up. But for the city to actually work as a unified whole, you know, for commerce to flow, for the government to actually govern, you need bridges. Huge, complex suspension bridges connecting the banks.
It is a classic infrastructure problem. Because if you lose the bridges, you essentially have two isolated towns instead of one powerful city. And in this physiological landscape, I'm guessing you're referring to the human brain.
The brain is exactly that divided city. We have the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. And the bridge. That is the corpus callosum.
A vital structure.
Yeah, it is this massive superhighway of nerves.
Yeah.
Millions of them. It is what lets the left hand know what the right hand is doing. Literally.
Right.
So here is the scenario I want to throw at you. A baby is born, and that bridge, it just is not there. It never got built.
That is a condition called agenesis of the corpus callosum. And it is a profound disruption of the brain's architecture. Without that connection, the integration of sensory and motor information is severely compromised.
Right. And usually when doctors see a baby with this missing bridge, along with some other very specific signs like fluid building up in the brain, which we call hydrocephalus, and stiff spastic limbs, they do not hesitate.
They recognize the pattern.
Exactly. They look at the checklist and say, okay, we know this. It is a classic, well-known genetic condition.
You are describing L1 syndrome. That is the textbook diagnosis for that specific constellation of symptoms. Doctors see the thumbs folded across the palm, the fluid, the missing corpus callosum, and they are, you know, 99% sure they're dealing with a mutation in the L1CM gene.
But here is where the mystery begins. What happens when you run the genetic test for L1 syndrome and it comes back completely negative?
The suspect has an alibi. The DNA is clean.
Yeah. You have a patient who looks perfect for the disease, but the known cause is missing.
That is the medical cliffhanger we are dealing with today. We are looking at a case of mistaken identity. It is a genetic lookalike that has been hiding in the human genome, mimicking a known disease so perfectly that it has fooled experts for years.
We are going to uncover a completely new culprit today, a gene that acts as the architect for those bridges in the brain. And when this architect goes on strike, the city falls apart.
It really is a detective story, one that takes us from the bedside of patients in Italy and France all the way down to the microscopic scaffolding inside a single cell.
Before we crack the case, we need to give a massive shout out to the detectives who put this puzzle together. We are diving into a study published just recently in March 2026 in the American Journal of Human Genetics.
This was a monumental effort led by Valentina Serpieri, Enza Maria Valente, and their colleagues at the University of Pavia in Italy and the University of Rouen in France.
It wasn't just them, though. It was a huge international team. We were talking about a collaboration that spanned borders to identify this new disorder.
And their paper, Biallelic Variants in FSE21L Cause a Neurodevelopmental Disorder Overlapping with L1 Syndrome, is the roadmap for our discussion today.
Okay, so let us unpack the clinical puzzle first. We mentioned the missing bridge, the corpus callosum, but these patients were dealing with a lot more than just that, right? The paper lists a few really heavy symptoms.
They were. The clinical presentation is quite severe. We are talking about a complex neurodevelopmental disorder. As you mentioned, hydrocephalus is a major feature.
Just to clarify, that is the fluid buildup.
Exactly. That is the accumulation of cerebrospinal fluid in the brain's ventricles. It causes them to enlarge and puts a lot of dangerous pressure on the brain tissue.
And then there's the movement issue. The paper mentions spastic tetraparesis. I can guess what spastic means, but break down the rest for me.
Well, tetra implies four and paresis implies weakness.
Oh, so all four limbs.
Yes. Spastic tetraparesis means stiffness and weakness or outright paralysis affecting all four limbs, both arms and both legs. So you have a child who has profound difficulty moving, likely has significant intellectual disability, and on the MRI, that crucial bridge, the corpus callosum, is either completely gone or very underdeveloped.
And this is where the L1 syndrome comparison comes in. You said this looks exactly like it. Is it just the bridge, or are there other clues?
It is the specific combination. L1 syndrome is caused by mutations in a gene called L1-SAM. It is an X-linked disorder.
Meaning it mostly affects boys.
Right, primarily affects males. And the symptoms are almost identical. You have the hydrocephalus, the spasticity, and a very specific thumb position called adducted thumbs, where the thumbs are clasped tightly across the palms. The patients in this new study had a phenotype, a physical presentation, that was virtually indistinguishable from L1 syndrome.
But these patients did not have the L1-SAM mutation. And that must be, you know, a terrifying place to be for a family and for a doctor.
It is incredibly isolating. You have a sick child, you have a name for the symptoms, but you do not have the cause.
Yeah.
And without the cause, you do not know the risk for future children, and you do not really understand what went wrong biologically. You are essentially managing symptoms without a map.
So the researchers had a mission. Find the missing gene. Find the actual arsonist who burned down the bridge. How do you even start looking for a needle in a haystack like that when you do not even know which haystack to look in?
Well, in the modern era of rare disease genetics, you use something that I like to call a dating app for geneticists.
I love this concept. Please explain how scientists are swiping right on DNA.
It is a web-based platform called Gene Matcher. It completely solved the isolation problem. Basically, a researcher in Italy finds a patient with a mutation in a specific gene, let us say Gene X, and a specific set of symptoms. They upload that data.
Okay.
Meanwhile, a researcher in France has a patient with a mutation in the same Gene X and similar symptoms. The system matches them.
So it connects people who are holding different pieces of the exact same puzzle.
Precisely. Through Gene Matcher, this team identified 11 individuals from 6 completely unrelated families. Families A through F, they were from all over, different backgrounds, different countries, but they all shared the specific mystery condition.
And once they had this cohort, they could start looking at their DNA together. They used exome sequencing, right?
Yes. They sequenced the exome, which is the part of the genome that actually codes for proteins, and when they aligned the data, a clear pattern emerged. All these patients had biallelic variants in a gene called FSD1L.
Biallelic. Let us pause on that term. That means both copies of the gene were broken.
Correct. We have 2 copies of most genes, one from mom, one from dad. In this case, the patients inherited a mutated copy from both parents. This is an autosomal recessive pattern.
Which is a huge clue, is it not? Because remember, the lookalike L1 syndrome is X-linked.
That is a critical distinction. L1 syndrome affects boys almost exclusively because they only have 1 X chromosome. If that X has a bad L1-SAM gene, they get the disease.
Because girls have a backup.
Exactly. Girls have 2 X chromosomes, so they usually have a healthy backup copy. But FSD1L is on chromosome 9. It affects boys and girls equally if they inherit 2 bad copies.
So right away, the inheritance pattern is telling us this is something different, even if the symptoms look the same. But finding the gene variant is just step 1. You can find a typo in a book, but you have to prove that the typo actually ruins the story. They had to prove that breaking FSD1L causes these brain defects.
And this is the part that validates the computer findings. They did not just look at the data. They went into the lab and started breaking things to see what happened. They used mouse models to replicate the disease.
And how do you give a mouse a specific human brain disease?
They use a technique called in utero electroporation. It sounds intense, and it is highly sophisticated.
Wait, in utero, so while they're still developing?
Yes. They used CRISPR-Cas9, the gene editing tool, to knock out or delete the FSD1L gene in mouse embryos while they were still in the womb.
So they created mice that were missing this specific architect during the exact window when the brain is being built. What happened to the mouse brains?
They developed the same structural failures. The mouse brains showed ventricular dilation in enlarged ventricles, specifically on the side where the gene was deleted. They effectively replicated the hydrocephalus seen in the human patients.
That is the smoking gun right there. You break the gene in the mouse, you get the disease.
Right.
But they did not stop there, did they? They wanted to know why. Well, what is FSD1L actually doing? They took cells from the patient's skin cells and turned them into stem cells.
Yes. Induced pluripotent stem cells. They took skin fibroblasts, reprogrammed them into stem cells, and then tried to coax those stem cells to become neurons, brain cells.
And did they grow into neurons?
They failed. When they tried to differentiate into neurons, they could not do it properly. They died off or just did not mature. This proved that FSD1L is absolutely essential for a stem cell to become a functional neuron.
Okay, so we know FSD1L is the culprit. We know it causes the brain to fail to build correctly.
Yeah.
But let us get into the mechanics. What is this protein actually doing inside the cell? You mentioned scaffolding earlier.
This is where it gets really interesting for anyone who loves cell biology. The study found that the FSD1L protein is a microtubule-associated protein.
Microtubules, those are like the skeleton of the cell, right?
Cerebrate tracts, that is the best way to think of them. Microtubules are the structural beams that give a cell its shape, and they are also the highways for transport inside the cell. But they do something else critical. They form the mitotic spindle.
The machine that pulls DNA apart when a cell divides.
Yes. And when the researchers looked at the patient's cells under a microscope, they saw that this spindle was, well, it was messy, it was misaligned, it was too short. The machine that is supposed to neatly divide the genetic material was broken.
So every single time these cells tried to divide to build a brain, they were struggling.
And that leads to abnormal nuclei and cell death. But there is another structure built of microtubules, the primary cilium.
The little antenna.
The cellular antenna. Almost every single cell has one. It senses the environment, detects signaling molecules, and tells the cell what to do. In the patient's cells, these antennas were fewer in number and significantly shorter.
So we have a broken skeleton, a broken division machine, and a broken antenna. It is a triple threat.
It is a systemic failure of the microtubule network. And that perfectly explains the phenotype. If you cannot divide properly, and you cannot sense your environment, and you cannot transport things, you simply cannot build a complex structure like the corpus callosum.
Speaking of the corpus callosum, the MRI findings in the human patients were super specific. They mentioned squared off ventricles.
Yes, that is a radiological sign often seen in these types of defects. But there was another anatomical detail that was missing, something called the pyramid decussation.
Pyramid decussation. That sounds like an Indiana Jones trap. What is it, actually?
It is located deep in the brainstem. It is the exact point where the nerve fibers from the left side of the brain cross over to control the right side of the body, and vice versa.
Oh, that is why the left brain controls the right hand.
Correct. And in these patients, that crossing point, that decussation was missing. The nerves did not cross over.
So not only is the bridge between the hemispheres missing upstairs, but the wiring that goes down to the body is also not crossing downstairs. That explains the paralysis and the stiffness.
It paints a very clear picture of a brain that simply cannot send fibers across the midline. Whether it is left to right in the cerebrum or crossing over in the brainstem, the guidance system is broken.
Which brings us back to the mimicry. Why does this look so much like L1 syndrome? We have two totally different genes, L1CAM and FSD1L. Why do they produce the exact same disaster?
This is the beautiful insight of the paper. They looked at where these genes hang out in the developing brain. They found that FSD1L and L1CAM are expressed in the exact same neighborhoods.
They are neighbors.
They are basically roommates. They are both found in the cortical plate, specifically layers 3 and 5, and in the corpus callosum itself.
So they are in the same place at the same time.
And doing very similar jobs. Both proteins are involved in axonal guidance. They are the air traffic controllers telling the nerve fibers where to grow, and they are involved in fasciculation.
Fasciculation. That implies bundling, doesn't it? Like taking a bunch of loose wires and zip tying them together.
That is an incredibly accurate visualization. To build a bridge like the corpus callosum, you need millions of axons to travel together in a tight bundle. If L1CAM is missing, they cannot stick together. If FSD1L is missing, the internal skeleton that drives that directional growth is broken.
So the mechanism of failure is different. One is sticky glue on the outside, the other is internal structure on the inside, but the result is exactly the same. The bridge collapses.
Precisely. It is a classic case of convergent phenotypes, different molecular causes leading to the exact same structural failure.
The paper also classifies this disorder in a really interesting way. They call it a secondary ciliopathy. Can we unpack that? I know ciliopathy means a disease of the cilia.
Right. Primary ciliopathies are diseases where the main defect is in the cilia itself. The antenna is broken. This causes things like kidney cysts, blindness, and brain malformations. Joubert syndrome is a famous example.
But here the primary problem is not the antenna, it is the stuff the antenna is made of.
Exactly. The primary issue is the microtubule skeleton. But because the cilia are built out of...
out of microtubules, so the cilia break too.
Yes. So you get symptoms that look like a ciliopathy, like the vision loss and the severe brain malformations. But the root cause is actually upstream.
It helps explain why the symptoms are so messy. It is not just one thing going wrong. It is a foundational element of the cell that is glitching.
It really underscores how interconnected these cellular systems are. You cannot damage the skeleton without damaging the antenna.
So, practically speaking, what does this mean for doctors and families?
Well, it is a game changer. For a doctor, if you have a baby who looks like they have L1 syndrome, hydrocephalus, spasticity, missing corpus callosum, but the LNCR test is negative, you now have a definitive next step. You test for FSD1L.
And for the families?
It provides an answer. And genetically, it changes the risk profile completely. If it were L1 syndrome, which is X-linked, the mother is often a carrier, and there is a 50% chance her sons will be affected. That is a very high recurrence risk.
But with FSD1L?
Because it is recessive, both parents are carriers. The risk is 25% for each pregnancy, regardless of gender.
That is a massive difference when you are planning a family or trying to understand recurrence risk. It changes the conversation entirely.
It also opens the door for potential therapies in the future, or at least better management, because we now understand the mechanism involves microtubules. We are not flying blind anymore.
It is incredible how one paper can solve a cold case like this. They started with a few families who had no answers and ended up defining a completely new biological pathway for how the brain builds its bridges.
It really validates the power of genomic medicine. These families were likely on a diagnostic odyssey for years, and now they finally have a name.
So bringing it all together, we have identified a new disorder. It is caused by mutations in FSD1L. This gene is the foreman for the microtubule construction crew. When it is out to lunch, the cell skeleton is weak, the division machinery is sloppy, and the sensory antennas are short.
And as a result, the massive bridges that connect the brain's hemispheres fail to form, leading to a condition that perfectly mimics the well-known L1 syndrome.
It is a master of disguise, finally unmasked.
And it forces us to look closer at the undiagnosed pile.
That is exactly what I was thinking. Here is my question for you and for our listeners.
Yeah.
We found this one. FSD1L was hiding behind L1 syndrome. How many other genetic lookalikes are out there?
That is the provocative question.
Think about it. How many thousands of cases are sitting in medical files right now, diagnosed as atypical disease X or just unknown, when really they are perfect mimics caused by a completely different gene?
We are likely just scratching the surface of these molecular doppelgangers. As we sequence more exomes and genomes, I suspect we will find that many single diseases are actually clusters of lookalikes, each with a unique molecular story.
It makes you wonder how much of what we think we know about disease is just a case of mistaken identity waiting to be solved.
Indeed. It's a humbling thought, but also a very exciting one for the future of medicine.
Absolutely. There is always more to learn. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now, stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Whisper halls that widen and hollow. We hold those images close and try not to follow. We trace the broken threads, name the silence in the glow. We watch the tiny antenna shorten, the current slow. But in the dark, there rises a catches the cold. Show the spindles trembling hands. Cells that once would reach now cannot make their plans. Axons lose their compass. Bridges fail to grow. The quiet architecture moves too slow. Not a single answer. The line.